Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and on the docket today. First, the Harvey Weinstein jury selection process. What in the hell is taking so long? A father of four and a former chemist is now accused of murder and cannibalism. The Harley Dilly search is over. Have you ever wanted to just do trial by combat? And our dumb criminal of the day, you almost feel sorry for him. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk. Thank you for tuning in. If you have not already subscribed, we would ask you please do so. If you like to receive notifications, hit that little bell. And obviously, if you like our video, hit the thumbs up. And please leave us a comment. First on the docket today, the Harvey Weinstein jury selection process. What in the hell is taking so long? We are now in week two of jury selection. All right. This is taking too long. I just had a case where we had hundreds of jurors brought in. I think we were 500 some odd. And it was a multiple deceased baby case. And we were able to plow through those jurors rather quickly. If the jurors can't be fair and impartial, you get rid of them and you keep bringing more in until you have enough to seat the potential panel. Contrary to what Mr. Weinstein is going to believe and contrary to what the district attorney is going to believe, there are people out there who have not heard of Mr. Weinstein and do not care in any way about what's taking place. The biggest thing is people don't want to have their time wasted. And when you're taking jury selection to take this long, this is when the judge needs to take control. Now, the judge's questionnaire has some, I think, 74 questions total. And this is a jury questionnaire that looks very similar to most jury questionnaires related to sexual assault cases that I've seen everywhere. They've just recycled it. They simply reuse it and ask all the same questions over and over again. It's not that difficult. What simply should be asked is, if you are the victim of a sexual assault or you know of somebody who's been a sexual assault, you raise your hand. You talk to them back in chambers. Can you be fair and impartial? No, you can't. Okay, you kick them out. You don't need to talk to them or you don't need to try and rehabilitate these jurors. Let's get the show on the road here, Judge. Let's get this thing rolling. Now, yes, everybody's looking for their perfect juror. Obviously, the perfect juror for Mr. Weinstein is going to be somebody who doesn't believe that the Me Too movement has any credibility, possibly somebody who has been a male victim of the Me Too, somehow been compromised, or maybe somebody who's done that inappropriate things. I know a lot of people don't want females or say they don't want females for a male defendant, but I told you my theory on that before. Women can be very judgmental of other women. If they don't like them, look out. They will destroy them and not believe a word they say. Now, the prosecution's going to want somebody who doesn't believe that everyone who has been sexually assaulted immediately runs to the police or call the police. And, you know, there's so much expert testimony about that. Every woman handles these situations completely differently. Some will make an immediate outcry to friends or family and the police. Others will keep it to themselves for years. I can tell you, one of the most awkward situations when you're a defense attorney and you have all these potential jurors, and I've seen this where people have been called back in because they've checked the little box and they said that they've been a victim of sexual assault. And literally these people said, I blocked this out of my mind. I haven't thought about it for 20 years, 40 years at one point. I had a lady break down and said literally she's just repressed it, brought back all these emotions and had to obviously send her on her way. But that's why if people check the box, you get them out of there. You get people that don't. You get people that says, oh, my wife has been a victim of sexual assault. Get them out of there because you don't want jurors that are going to try and take out on the defendant, somebody who may be trying to get revenge for their wife or their daughter or anybody, or, you know, their sister. Get them out of there. They're there. They just need to keep moving. This judge needs to get a hold of this. And, you know, this thing could literally be turning into an OJ trial real soon here if this judge doesn't clamp down. It doesn't take this long to seat a jury of this kind. They're making it drag out this long, and it doesn't need to be. Next on the docket, we talked about this case Saturday, and it was just kind of breaking, and it was a little over the top, but I thought, wow, now let's take a little closer look into it. So there's a case up in Michigan right now where a gentleman is a father of four, and he worked as a chemist, obviously very smart individual, but now he is accused of murder and cannibalism. Let's get to these details, and wow. So the defendant in this particular case is a gentleman by the name of Mark Latunsky, and he faces murder charges for allegedly killing and cannibalizing a 25-year-old grinder date on Christmas Eve. Now, some of these descriptions get a little graphic, so if you have children in the room, you may want to cover their ears. Now, Mr. Latunsky goes by several different names. He goes by Wilk Volkas and Edgar Thomas Hill. He gave the name Edgar Thomas Hill at his arraignment and to his attorney, saying he's part of the Thomas clan of Wales and was given the Latunsky moniker as protection, according to court filings. As stated, he was once a well-off chemist, married, father of four. Now, Mr. Latunsky awaits a competency evaluation and a possible insanity defense. Now, the different sides to Mr. Latunsky may shed some light on the police's attempt to make sense of how a chance online meeting turned into a dark sex tale ending in murder and cannibalism. Now, the victim in this particular case is Kevin Bacon, no relation to the actor. A friend of Mr. Bacon reported that he had left about 5:20 p.m. on December 24th to meet a stranger that he had met on a dating app. But when Mr. Bacon didn't show up on Christmas for breakfast at his parents' home the next day, the Bacon family contacted police. Mr. Bacon's car was later found in a parking lot in what is known as the Clayton Township. Carl Bacon, Kevin Bacon's father, reports that in his son's car, he found his son's cell phone, a wallet, and a bag with his clothes in it. Now, apparently, it was the cell phone that led police to the gay, bisexual, and transgender dating app of Grindr, and subsequently, Mark Latunsky's doorstep. It is believed that Bacon went to Latunsky's house quite willingly, and apparently, there were conversations on the app that were very sexual in nature. Latunsky, for his part, spent part of Christmas with his estranged husband, Jamie Arnold, and Arnold's friends, acting as normal as he can be, according to Mr. Arnold. Latunsky let the police into his home on December 28th to look for Bacon. In what the police described was a secret room that was not immediately visible, they found the missing dead man. Latunsky told the police he had stabbed Bacon twice in the back of his neck, then strung him up, then sliced his throat. Latunsky confessed that he then castrated Bacon with a knife, took Bacon's testicles upstairs, cooked them, and ate them. The police are uncertain as to the exact date of the death, but the family believes it was Christmas Eve into Christmas Day. The medical examiner also believes that Bacon died prior to being strung up by his ankles with the use of a mechanical device. Now, the police are looking for more information and looking for other men who may have met Latunsky on Grindr. The police are currently aware of two. A New York man, born in 1973, fled Latunsky's home, jumped a fence, and called police after becoming frightened during a consensual sexual encounter on October 10th, according to the police. Then, a 29-year-old Lansing man wearing only a kilt got spooked during a consensual encounter in which he was chained up in Latunsky's basement on November 25th. He fled to a neighbor's home with Latinsky in pursuit of the $300 kilt. Neither man wanted to file a police report. The New York man spent multiple days with Latinsky. For obvious reasons, a lot of people are embarrassed for even being in these situations and don't want any police involvement because it'll require them to have to tell their family and friends of what the hell they're doing in their spare time. Latinsky has a long history of mental illness, according to divorce filings with his ex-wife, Emily. They were married in 2001 and divorced in 2013, and they had four children. It's alleged that Latinsky was diagnosed in 2010 and 2012 with severe, recurrent, and chronic major depression with a psychotic feature, adjustment disorder with depression and anxiety, with paranoid schizophrenia and borderline personality traits, which was outlined in August 2019 to suspend parenting time. Apparently, Mr. Latinsky's situation can be treated with medication, but he refuses to take his meds. According to his wife, when he doesn't take his medicine, he'll watch torture, horror movies, talk to himself, stay out all night, threaten to get rid of his children's animals, claim their son isn't his child, and fail to shower or shave. This is according to filings going back as far as 2013. It's been alleged that he has kidnapped his own children and failed to follow the custody plan set in place by the court. It's also been reported that Mr. Latinsky has been committed to hospitals four times for mental health concerns. Mr. Latinsky is apparently quite intelligent, and he interned for Dow Chemical after graduating from Central Michigan University in 1991. He has a master's degree in chemistry from Iowa State, and he was making a good living. He was apparently fired in 2019 from an undisclosed job for refusing to take medication. Apparently, Mr. Latinsky thought that his employer wanted him to put harmful chemicals in products, and he refused to do so. According to police, who have seen lots of bad dismemberment cases, say that this is something that they have never seen in their some 35 years of police experience. Obviously, I think the rule of thumb here is if people are going to be using these dating sites, you really need to check out who is on the other side. And just be careful out there. This is going to be a weird one to follow. I think that Mr. Latinsky is probably not competent to proceed. And if he is restored to competency to stand trial, he may be going off to Michigan's equivalent to their mental health facilities for a long, long time. Next on the docket, unfortunately, the Harley Dilley search is over, and it didn't end as we were all hoping it would, and that would be that Harley was returned safely to home. Harley Dilley was 14, and he was a young YouTuber. He had gotten a little notoriety, but had kind of changed his whole channel setup quite recently. And unfortunately, he hadn't been seen now for nearly a month. He was found today in the chimney of a basically abandoned home, a home that's been used for a summer rental as it's close to Lake Erie, and apparently was going through some renovation. Apparently, the police had walked by, looked, didn't see anything out of the ordinary, but ultimately went back and searched the house, and they found Harley Dilley trapped in the chimney of the house. Apparently, Harley got on the roof and attempted to go into the house via the chimney and basically got stuck. They found his coat and eyeglasses, and no one suspects any foul play. The police are treating this as an accident. The next case on the docket is a case where a man wants trial by combat with Japanese swords to settle a custody battle with his ex-wife. This gentleman does not want to just joust with his wife. He is willing to have his wife's attorney participate as well. Where things get a little weird in this particular case is David Ostrom, who lives in Payola, Kansas, claims in court documents that his ex-wife, Bridget Ostrom, destroyed him legally. So now Mr. Ostrom has taken it upon himself to file further motions, what is referred to as pro se motions, and he is creating even more problems for himself. This is a classic example of why you get an attorney when you go to court. I don't care whether it's divorce court, civil court, criminal court, get yourself an attorney. Even a bad attorney is usually better than someone with no attorney because the other side is going to take advantage of you. And the judge is not there to help you. The judge cannot give you legal advice. All he can do is call balls and strikes. When you represent yourself, you are to proceed as though you are a licensed attorney. You are held to the same conduct, the same standards, the same rules apply. So Mr. Ostrom has apparently filed a motion requesting trial by combat. And apparently he got this idea because he had read somewhere that to this day, trial by combat has never been explicitly banned or restricted as a right in the United States, according to Ostrom. Ostrom argued in his court pleadings that it had recently been used as 1818 in Britain. Not exactly very persuasive and certainly non-binding legal authority. What Mr. Ostrom is attempting to do is apparently demonstrate absurdity by his own absurdity because he's frustrated with his ex-wife's attorney, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Hudson. Now, the attorney, Mr. Hudson, filed a response to Mr. Ostrom's request. And the first thing the attorney did was to correct some of the spelling in Mr. Ostrom's pleadings. Hudson argued that because a duel could end in death, such ramifications probably outweigh those of property tax and custody issues. Mr. Hudson also brought to the court's attention that it should be noted that just because the U.S. and Iowa constitutions do not specifically prohibit battling another person with a deadly katana sword, it does prohibit a court sitting in equity from ordering the same. Now, Hudson also went on and requested that Mr. Ostrom's visitations rights be restricted and that he immediately undergo a court-ordered psychological evaluation. Mr. Ostrom simply wants the other side to say uncle and declare him the winner in the custody battle. Now, that's certainly not going to happen. Now, normally when we have our dumb criminal contestant of the day, who's obviously a contestant for the dumb criminal contestant of the week, it's kind of funny. And when we first read this case, it was kind of funny. But then you kind of feel sorry for our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And our dumb criminal is Gilbert Paul Ware, 86. Now, he is accused of going into a Greenville, South Carolina bank, brandishing a weapon, and taking off with the money that was given to him by tellers. Now, Mr. Ware did not get very far. In fact, he was just right around the corner because, well, he didn't have a getaway car, and he's just not as fast as he used to be. Mr. Ware is obviously in custody and is being charged. This particular contestant, I almost feel a little sorry for him as to why he thinks he needs to rob a bank at this age and why did he do it. But maybe, who knows? I've always said that if I ever just get tired enough and I want to need a little relaxation, a little time to myself, you need to go to federal prison, rob a bank. Now, don't use any weapons. Just simply ask people, can I have some money? And you'll get a couple a little time, a little lay down. Maybe that's simply what Mr. Ware needed, a little relaxation. My guess is there's probably something a little deeper here that Mr. Ware probably has some sort of medical treatment that he needs to receive, and he's not getting it. Or maybe he just figured, what the hell, let's go for it. But either way, because Mr. Ware didn't exactly plan as well as he should have, he is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Thanks for watching. We'll have another episode tomorrow. Have a great day.